This is Bob DiBenedetto on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook with the Healthy Planet Radio Show. Stay tuned, because while you've been listening to all of this empowering and sometimes disturbing information on the Healthy Planet, natural alternatives, and Democracy Now!, every couple of years, there comes the time when you can actually go speak your voice and transform all that passion and all that wisdom into action. And that time is coming up on November 8th. So if you find yourself asking, what about us, when the politicians vote against the environment, vote against our life support system? Well, this show is going to give you the information you need to take action on November 8th. Become an environmental voter. Stay tuned for an interview we just taped with Julie Tai, the president of the New York League of Conservation Voters, where we're going to be sharing the tools to become an empowered environmental voter.
It's the start of us waking up. Come on, are you ready? I'll be ready. Now it's time to let them know. Are you ready? What about us? What about all the times you said you had the answer?
And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet Radio Program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for what is, of course, the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. And that is what all of us want. I'm actually very excited about this evening's show. And that's because in a world full of challenges and worries that you are very well aware of, we're going to be talking about the transformative improvements on Long Island and in New York State that your vote and my vote can bring about on November 8th. And if you think I'm exaggerated by saying transformative, stay with us. And I hope you share my joy by the end of this show. And we're only 1 month away from those midterm elections, in case you haven't heard. I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like each election we hold these days is even more important than it used to be, for both environmental reasons and due to the real threats that we're seeing to our democracy these days. There have always been environmental issues, and many of them have been incredibly important and literally life and death issues. After all, we're talking about our life support system, which does just that. It supports our lives. Air pollution in this country, for one example, has been calculated to kill from tens to hundreds of thousands of Americans each year, while sickening many millions. And of course, worldwide, it kills millions. But recently, with climate change in the picture, in addition to the present danger, the urgency is accelerating. And that's because if we don't limit the climate gases in our atmosphere now, more serious impacts could be felt for decades and even centuries into the future. Even if we take aggressive action, say, 10 years from now. And the longer we wait, the less we're able to keep those most extreme consequences from becoming a reality, thus the urgency. I also think those of us who have been advocating environmental action are also a bit traumatized by what happened under the previous administration that was decidedly anti-environment. And that wasn't just your garden variety, I believe in this or that, and sometimes I vote against the environment, but one that did things like put a coal lobbyist in charge of the agency that's tasked with protecting our environment. With all that said, this show is about the upcoming elections and again, about the exciting possibilities that await us. And it's about giving those of you who do indeed care about clean water, fresh air, and a stable climate, and our environment in general, that's all of us, the information you need to go to the polls on November 8th or vote early in the 10 days prior to Election Day, to choose candidates and vote on issues that simply reflect our collective concern for our collective well-being. And I have the perfect guest to inform and empower our audience to do just that. Her name is Julie Tai, and she is the president of the New York League of Conservation Voters and the New York League of Conservation Voters Education Fund. Due in part to the League's and tar advocacy, the state enacted the Climate Leadership Community Protection Act, the nation's most progressive climate law, which we'll talk about shortly, and a host of other pieces of legislation to reduce emissions from the transportation and building sectors. Previously, she served as chief of staff of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, where she oversaw DEC's policy development, helped run the nearly 3,000 employee agency, and served as a key member of the organization's leadership team. She was instrumental in advancing the DEC's legislative priorities, including a 10-year, $1 billion Superfund authorization. She was also a primary negotiator for the landmark $2.5 billion Clean Water Infrastructure Act, the incorporation of the Climate Change Program into New York's historic $300 million Environmental Protection Fund, three successful constitutional amendments, and the most comprehensive electronics recycling law in the country. Julie Tai, thank you for joining us on the Healthy Planet Radio Show.
Thank you. We need to give you the short version of my bio. And now the EPF is a historic $400 million, thanks to Governor Kathy Hochul this year in the state legislature.
And I always have the choice of using the short version, but sometimes I like to give credit where credit is due, and you deserve it. You've been busy over the last decade.
Thank you.
Julie, the New York League of Conservation Voters says that it is the only statewide environmental organization in New York that fights for clean water, clean air, renewable energy, and open space through political action, and that is nonpartisan, pragmatic, and effective. So talk about the work of the New York League of Conservation Voters and describe how your work involves evaluating, endorsing, and electing.
Sure. So as you noted, we are a statewide environmental advocacy organization. We work on policy issues at the state level and at the local level where we have chapters. We happen to have a chapter on Long Island that is very strong, and we're working on growing that. But we focus on policies that will help us move towards fighting climate change through clean energy, through clean transportation, through addressing buildings, clean water, investing in open space, and making sure that we are making strides towards achieving zero waste. So we really cover sort of a broad stretch of environmental policies in that, working with our partners. We develop policy agendas, working with all of our partners in those various sectors, including many organizations on Long Island, like Citizens Campaign for the Environment, to advance our policies. And then we use what we call the cycle of accountability. You know, once during the state legislative session, we will notify legislators of where we stand on various pieces of legislation. And then we put together a scorecard that we can rate environmental policy and how legislators have acted on them. And then we use the scorecard to educate voters about how elected officials have voted on environmental policies that we identified as our priorities. And then further, we use that to inform our endorsements, because we do endorse candidates at the state, local, and federal level here in New York based on the environment alone. You know, that's really what we focus on. We understand there are a lot of other issues that come into play, but really it's about, where do lawmakers stand in the environment? Our education fund uses policy forums and civic engagement forums to bring to the fore policy issues related to the environment and make sure that candidates are talking about the environment on the campaign trail. Because while on Long Island, it's very common in particular to talk about clean water, it's not always the case that it comes up in a general debate. You know, for the first time in 2020, the Democratic candidates had a forum focused just on climate, but in the last election cycle, the last presidential cycle, it didn't come up at all. So we try to make sure that that's really front and center. For example, we held a forum both for Congressional District 3 and Congressional Districts 4 on Long Island, where Tom Suozzi and Kathleen Rice aren't running for election again, because we want to make sure that candidates are focusing on this issue, but also that that the electorate, the voters, know where candidates stand on those issues. So those are sort of some of the highlights of what we do. But we believe very strongly that clean air and clean water are nonpartisan issues, right? Everybody wants that for their families, which is why it's important to us that we are nonpartisan. And we do endorse candidates of both stripes based on their environmental record. So we're very proud of that. And that is an important part of who we are, for us to be nonpartisan in our formation and bipartisan in our endorsements, where candidates deserve it.
Our life support system doesn't know what party you belong to.
That's right. That is correct.
All right. So we'll be talking more about the environmental scorecard, which is a very valuable tool for you to use this coming election. But I'd like to also start now by looking in the rearview mirror. I'm going to ask you to give us a glimpse at the state of environmental affairs in New York State. And why don't you just talk about some recent accomplishments of yours and the league's work, and concurrently, since they often go hand in hand, about what the key environmental issues and legislative accomplishments have been in New York State in recent years, starting with the 2019 Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which every New Yorker should know about and celebrate.
So we're really excited to work with many other organizations to advance the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which, as you noted earlier, is a landmark, historic, and nation-leading economy-wide bill to really move us forward towards a green economy and off of fossil fuels. It requires the state to receive 70% of the electricity that it generates from renewable energy and 100% to be emissions free by 2040. And we are well on our way to achieving that. NYSERDA and the governor have announced projects and contracts that have us up to 66% of our power should be online to be renewable by 2030, which is a long way from where we are now. Statewide, we get about 25 to 28% of our power from renewable energy sources, but overwhelmingly that's in upstate New York, predominantly through, historic hydropower. But we are seeing a lot of growth, in particular with respect to solar. And of course, on Long Island, we are super excited for offshore wind, because that bill also requires that the state seek 9,000 megawatts of offshore wind as part of that goal of renewable energy. We're hoping, because New Jersey just announced that they're going a little bit higher, we're hoping that Governor Hochul, should she win re-election, which we certainly hope she does, will up that number, because we can't lose to New Jersey on offshore wind, in my opinion. Clearly, New York is the better state when it comes to offshore wind, and why we're really excited that South Fork Wind is moving forward as New York's first offshore wind project that actually started construction earlier this year. And we were at the groundbreaking with Ørsted and Eversource when that happened. And we're part of WindWorks Long Island, that helps to advance offshore wind as part of our state, as long as it's responsibly developed. So that is one component of it, is the energy. And that's where the basis of this. And there are many other offshore wind projects that we're thrilled about. Equinor has a number of projects. Ørsted and Eversource have another project. And now they're actually, the state is in the middle of a procurement for more offshore wind. And there's six new companies in addition to those two who are eligible, because the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management did what we call a lease sale earlier this year and awarded lease areas in the New York Bight, which is that part of the ocean that's south of New York and east of New Jersey that is available for offshore wind. So we're really excited about that. But the CLCPA doesn't only deal with electricity, it deals with the entire economy. And the state is in the middle of developing a plan right now that's due by the end of the year for how we're going to get to 85% emissions reduction across the entire economy by 2050, with a goal of net zero emissions. So that means we need to start tackling transportation. It means we need to start tackling manufacturing. It means we need to tackle emissions from the building sector, from the agriculture sector. So we really have a lot of work to do still to make that happen. And the state has taken some actions, on the renewable energy front, following the CLCPA, as it's called. The state did pass a bill called the Accelerated Renewable Energy Growth and Community Benefits Act, which is a long way of saying making it easier to site renewable energy, which is important because, again, that's the foundation upon which we're expecting the rest of these sectors to decarbonize. We've started to take action on transportation. Earlier this year, the state passed a bill that requires all new school buses to be zero emission by 2035. which is really exciting. A law was passed that requires better energy codes and more aggressive appliance standards, so that they use less energy, which is great for consumers. That's going to help us reduce how much energy we're using in the first place, as we're looking to use more electricity for these other sectors. We heard Governor Hochul announce just last week that the state has now finalized regulations requiring that all new cars and passenger trucks have to be basically electric that are sold in the state by 2035. And that'll help us move things along. But we still have a lot more work to do as far as that goes. So we're excited about some of the work that we've done, but we have more to do. And I'm sure I can want to take a pause, but there's a lot more we need to take action on.
Indeed. And the good thing is we know that you're going to be there to help that transformation continue. So before we get into the present elections, which is what we're going to be mainly talking about and what those hold in store for us in New York, I'll ask you to outline another recent legislative accomplishment on the national level. That is something that most everybody has heard about, the Inflation Reduction Act. Explain what that is, the environmental implications, and also how it's going to impact Americans.
So the Inflation Reduction Act is Congress actually taking action. I've spent a lot of time in the last year reminding people that the opposite of progress is often Congress. But we were really excited when Senator Schumer was able to get a deal with Senator Manchin to get a bill done. And the House, of course, followed suit with support from Kathleen Rice and Tom Suozzi from the Long Island delegation, of course, leadership from people like Hakeem Jeffries from New York City, which is going to really impact everything we do, from the air we breathe to the energy we produce to the jobs we create. The law is really taking concrete steps to enable the United States to produce more energy domestically, which means we'll be reducing our reliance on foreign supplies and fossil fuels. It's going to be giving grants to states and local governments to adopt the most modern building and energy codes. It's going to really supercharge what New York is already doing to create clean energy jobs by investing in large-scale renewable energy generation and battery storage in the state. We're expecting there's about, $34 billion available for that, including incentives to pay prevailing wages, so that we know that the jobs are very likely going to be union jobs and certainly good paying family sustaining jobs. It's going to be helping to fund state and local green banks so that we can ramp up investments in clean energy projects. And there's going to be environmental justice block grants and investments so that we have cleaner buses and trucks in communities that are really overburdened with pollution. It's going to help us implement our law by providing much more funding to do that. But importantly, it's not just going to help at the sort of the institutional, at the government level and the business level. It's going to help consumers. There's money in there that are the rebates for consumers to retrofit their homes to add insulation or ceiling or ventilation or update their wiring to make them much more energy efficient, up to $1,600 for insulation and air sealing and ventilation, and $2,500 for electric wiring. You can get more rebates for installing highly efficient appliances like new electric clothes dryers or an electric stove or oven or a water heater, or really importantly, as we're thinking about how we transition our heating and cooling, for what's called an air heat pump. There's up to $4,000 in rebates for that available for consumers. And the expectation is that American households can be expected to save $170 to $220 per year because of the Inflation Reduction Act. So that is like really, really exciting, because we know people have been concerned about inflation, and this is a way that you can help get savings for yourself in your electric bill. And we know on Long Island that that's a cause for concern is, of course, the cost of electricity. There's also funding for tax credits for installing solar panels and battery storage systems. And we expect that the funding that's available could result in another 220,000 households in New York installing rooftop solar panels. So that is really amazing. And for people who have solar, you know, most of the time you're paying very little on your electric bill. It's mostly the connection fee. And it's a really great way for consumers to be more energy independent and reduce the amount that they're paying in electric every year by going green. And, you know, of course, reducing the amount of air pollution that's out there. So we're thrilled. We're so grateful for Senator Schumer for getting that over the finish line when it looked midsummer as though it was not happening. So it's really, really a credit to him that got done.
Indeed. And I can testify firsthand about the savings to one's electricity bill from solar energy, as that's what I've got. I've got geothermal heat pump, so no energy bill in this home.
Great.
And that is what is going to become available to many New Yorkers and many people in this country as time goes on. Everybody, we're going to electrify the sector that is currently run on products that, when they burn, they tend to kill people. So this is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We're talking to the New York League of Conservation Voters President Julie Tai about how to vote for pro-environment issues and candidates in the upcoming November 8th election. You can find out more about Julie Tai and the work of the New York League of Conservation Voters at www.nylcv.org. That's nylcv.org. And now we're going to shift to the present and learn about some of the environmental issues that are on the agenda to address in New York State today. So, Julie, I'm going to ask you to start by going into some depth on something that will actually be on the ballot next month. It'll be on the back of the ballot. So you need to go into the voting booth, fill it out the front and the back. You may choose to do the back first so you don't forget. It's the first such act in New York State in over 25 years, and it's called the Clean Water, Clean Air, Green Jobs Bond Act. Here's a quote of what you, Julie, said about this act in an article that appeared in the Daily News. Quote, New York stands on the brink of a historic opportunity to protect our water and air, shore up water infrastructure, and improve the quality of life in every part of the state, all while supporting thousands of good-paying jobs and investing in disadvantaged communities, end quote. And I think that when people find out about the broad actions that this act is actually going to make possible, it is indeed a historic opportunity, and you'll see that. So before I ask you about the details of the act, I'm going to ask you to explain how a bond act in general works.
Sure.
Who pays for it? What impact does it have on taxes? And I really want people listening to the rest of our conversation to understand this so that they can hear it with an open mind.
Sure. So a bond act is where the state has decided they want to invest some dollars that they will go to the market for to get bond funding for. So it's capital projects. It's real infrastructure, tangible projects that people can touch and feel and have value. They're passed by the legislature, but they decide that the voters should get to say yay or nay on whether or not they should move forward, which is why this is on the ballot. First time, as you noted, since 1996, when the voters last approved an environmental bond act. So we're really excited about that. This is something that's not going to have any measurable impact on taxes. It's going to be paid for the way all of everything else gets paid for in the state of New York. So this is not something that you're going to see, you know, your tax bill go up for, but you get to decide how this is going. Because as other debt is retired, this is kind of just replacing that other debt. But we are really excited that this is going to provide an opportunity to help our communities throughout New York make critical upgrades to water and sewer lines, to replace lead pipes, to maintain drinking water treatment. It's going to enable the communities to be investing in updating roads and sewers and drinking water pipes. It's going to improve our public health. There's funding for clean electric school buses, for street trees, for measures to mitigate climate change and flooding. to help expand and make our public buildings more reliant, more energy efficient, and to use renewable energy to preserve farmland and reduce runoff, protecting our lakes and our rivers and other wildlife habitats, and to increase access to parks and trails and campgrounds and nature centers and public waterfronts. And all of this, you know, we've done a study by AECOM for one of our partner organizations, Rebuild by Design, did a study on how many jobs this would be expected to create. And it's nearly 100,000 local jobs would be created if this initiative is passed by voters on November 8th. So we're part of a coalition called Vote Yes for Clean Water and Jobs. It's not just environmental groups, it's civic organizations, it's the labor community, including the AFL-CIO and many local labor unions, from construction, from the operating engineers, from the plumbers, you know, so we have the building trades. We're very excited to be working in partnership with labor, but it's also the business community, like the Construction Association of Long Island. So we're working all together, business community, the Long Island Association, the business community, the environmental community, local government, civic organizations, and labor to make sure that people know about this bond act, because we know when they hear about it, they're going to vote yes.
And these aren't just projects that will be undertaken that we haven't thought about before, we haven't needed before, and it's creating the need and then paying for it. These are things that need to happen. These are things that need to bring our society up to the modern day. I saw the ad for it, that one of the video ads, that's very clever, and it shows things that were going on in 1922. And it says, we don't use record players like we did back then. We didn't have a society that we have back then with the technology back then, but we're still using water infrastructure that dates back to 1922.
That's right.
And so these are actual real needs that we have. Now, this is even better than job creating, tax neutral, and economically and environmentally beneficial, because passing this act also leverages federal money from the infrastructure money that's available and out there waiting for New Yorkers. So it's going to spur actually billions of dollars in economic activity with the help of the federal government. Explain how the Infrastructure Act comes into this.
Sure. So typically the way federal grants work is that you're required to have a local match for that. And so, you know, when we built our pipes, for example, when we built our water treatment systems, the federal government paid for most of it. And then the state or the local and the local governments had to pay a share. But they've kind of divorced themselves for a long time and just were doing loans rather than providing just grant funding. So now this is an opportunity for us to say, OK, now because of the infrastructure bill that was passed in 2021 and to some extent that the Inflation Reduction Act, we'll be able to say, OK, federal government, you're giving us money. But we know that it requires a match, say a 25% match or a 50% match. The state of New York can then say, okay, we're going to have some money to help a local government apply for that. Because at the end of the day, right, your pipes are managed by your local community, whether that's the Water Authority or the Suffolk County Water Authority obviously does a lot of the drinking water and some of the wastewater. They can apply for funding and the state will provide a share of that so that the amount of money that's required by the ratepayers will be much less, because you'll be getting support from not just the federal government, but also the state government. So that will leverage a lot of money. We're really excited about that. And that's in part how we're going to get all those thousands of jobs also, is by not just with the money the state is providing with the locals, but also with bringing down that federal dollars. So that is a really exciting opportunity. This is the one of the biggest environmental measures on the ballot in 2022 in the entire country. And we know how important clean water is for Long Island, both from the fact that your drinking water is below your feet there, and because of the making sure that the coastlines are protected from storm surge and flooding associated with climate change. As we've seen, as we're approaching the anniversary of Superstorm Sandy, we know how people are concerned about that. And this will enable us to protect our shorelines using natural infrastructure, things like wetlands, to make sure that we are protecting our communities.
And wetlands actually serve a purpose toward protecting us. Explain that.
So wetlands do what they sound like, right? They absorb water. They help to reduce what they call wave action, right? So they reduce the intensity of a wave so that it doesn't go as high, it doesn't hit as hard, it reduces erosion. It also helps to actually clean water. So there are all the plants in there, and the soils help to attract, help to capture some of the pollutants that could otherwise impact drinking water. So it is a very important service that wetlands provide, both for reducing the impact of storm and absorbing storm water, as well as to sort of cleaning out some of those pollutants that might otherwise be impacting our drinking water. And I one of the other things that's covered in here, and I know is really an issue in Suffolk County. And Suffolk County, both Steve Ballone and Pete Scully have been doing a great job of this with funding from the state as well as from the county. Is, you know, there's a lot of people who rely on septic systems and cesspools. And the Bond Act will provide some more money to add to the money the state has already been investing and the county's been investing to replace those old septic systems and cesspools, or in some cases to, you know, get folks onto sewers rather than using those septic systems and cesspools in the future. Because as Ballone always says, nitrogen is public enemy number one for water quality on Long Island. And that's both for impacting our bays and our shellfish and our other flora and fauna, but also for the drinking water.
Absolutely. And this nitrogen comes from?
Nitrogen often comes from fertilizer.
And on Long Island, fertilizer
comes from and it comes from septic and other wastes.
Right. If you have duck farms or cesspools or people fertilizing their lawns, farmlands fertilizing, all of that goes to one place. It runs to the lowest place. It goes into the ground. It goes into the sound. And then we pay for it with problems. And this addresses those problems. Again, this is not addressing problems that we're making up. It's addressing problems that exist and that need to be handled. We're talking about 100,000 jobs. Let's not just go past that, because when you hear about job creation of dirty energy, and it's often a national issue, they'll be talking about pipelines and the number of jobs that they're adding, and it'll be 40, 50, 60, 70 long-term jobs. And every job is important. But we are talking about, just in one state here, 100,000 jobs. These are people who work in the community. They live in the community. They spend their paychecks in the community. And it creates a more thriving, more robust economy. So environmental action is not at odds with the economy, and it's not at odds with jobs. It is actually the best supporter, because it is, number one, needed. Number two, it's the wave of the future. And in looking at that, we're talking about, are we going to invest in 1922 technology or coal? Or are we going to invest in something, let's say we haven't talked about the electric vehicles much. Are we going to invest in electric vehicles that are something that everybody in the world is going to want, because they are simply better, more efficient, and cheaper than driving gas cars? And the answer is, we should be investing in the newest technology. And so that all of these, from the IRA to the Bond Act in New York State, are going to be investing in the future instead of going backwards.
That's right. That's right. And I think it's really, it's a testament to the labor movement that they are working together to find ways to make sure, A, that when we're moving forward with clean energy and projects like the Bond Act, that, we're paying prevailing wages so that people get a living wage out of this, that they can really afford to support their families. And it's something that we're excited to see at the state level. You're right. We haven't talked about electric vehicles yet. I mean, I mentioned that the governor has regulations that just passed last week that will require all new sales to be electric by 2035. But we have a lot of work to do to make it cheaper and easier. And that is something that is in the Inflation Reduction Act, is there are tax credits for electric vehicles that will make it easier and cheaper for people to buy them. And they're providing incentives to make batteries in the United States, or at least in the Western Hemisphere, so that we have more good jobs associated with creating electric batteries. And many of the car manufacturers have committed to moving to all electric vehicles already, including Ford and GM. So that is very exciting. On top of things like, I personally drive a Tesla, and all they make is electric vehicles. There's a few companies that only do electric vehicles. And we have a lot of work to do to make it easier for people to buy electric vehicles, because we're a state where they have restrictions on what's called direct sales of electric vehicles, or direct sales, where right now you have to go through a car dealership. You know, we are excited that more and more dealers are going to be selling electric vehicles, but right now they're not selling very many of them. And so we've been supporting of a bill that would allow more direct sales of electric vehicles, so that people have greater opportunities to buy them in New York. Because right now we have this sort of outdated law that only Tesla is allowed to have 5 facilities in New York. So none of the new companies can sell electric vehicles directly in New York. Tesla can't expand. Obviously, there's a location in Manhasset, where I personally was shopping for, when I was shopping for my car, I looked at the Tesla. But we'd like to see them be available in more places, because last year, you know, across the entire state, not even 3% of our sales of new cars was electric. So we have a lot of work to do, and we need to make it easier. And direct sales is a way that's no cost. One of the other things that we're working on is sort of policies for the future, not just for cars, but more, in some ways, more importantly, for medium and heavy duty vehicles, trucks and buses, is we'd like to see adoption of what's called the Clean Fuel Standard, which they've done in California and Oregon, and they're working on putting it in place in Canada and Washington state, is a requirement that they set a standard that would reduce emissions from all transportation fuels, including electric, over time. And that if you exceed the standard, which is basically the fossil fuels, they have to buy credits from anyone that's below the standard. And so it's an investment in renewable fuels and electric, and it provides incentives for businesses to move towards electric vehicles and to reduce using fossil fuels with the existing vehicles that they have. That's something that we believe would generate as much as $1.1 to $1.4 billion a year within the transportation sector for investments in clean transportation. And we think that that's really important, critically, because we can help to accelerate that transition to electric vehicles, in particular for those, again, medium and heavy duty fleets, those trucks and buses that are used by businesses and by, you know, nice bus, things like that. We can do it with paying from the fossil fuel industry, and we can be getting air pollution benefits in the short term by reducing our reliance on fossil fuels with renewable fuels. So things like the American Organics, right, their facility is just starting to put in an anaerobic digester that will collect food waste, and they can generate renewable natural gas with that can be used to replace fossil fuel gas. And that is something that we think is important, because we're going to continue to generate food waste. Even if we do much better at purchasing food properly, there's always going to be food waste that's generated, and yard waste and leaf waste that needs to be managed. And this is a way that we can get the energy value from it, and then also create a compost product that helps us to replenish our soil. So there's a lot of exciting innovation, I think, happening that can help us to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels very quickly, while also transitioning to the zero emission future that we're heading towards.
Yeah, and it's important to note that when New York does something, it doesn't just stay in New York. It has the impact of, like, a leader does something for the first time, and then everyone else follows, because it's clearly and obviously better, as we've mentioned already, all around. And it's just beneficial to the American public. And that's what programs like this are supposed to be, just beneficial in every way. And we're seeing so many hopeful actions here it's great to see the future is starting to accelerate and moving in the right direction.
Exactly.
And I'll just mention something else about the Bond Act, a couple of other things. First of all, there's open space, lands, conservation, and recreation included in the Bond Act. The Bond Act that is, by the way, again, on the back of your ballot, everybody, when you go to vote on November 8th, you turn your ballot over and you will see Proposition 1, the Bond Act. When you see that, that also has an impact on open space preservation and conservation. That could mean improving parks, increasing park acreage and open space. So this is potentially something else that's nice for the people who live on Long Island in New York State.
No, we're very excited about that. I think Adrian Esposito from Citizens Game from the Environment has indicated there's about 30,000 undeveloped acres of land in Long Island, and some of this money could be used to help protect some of those lands so that we're protecting the aquifer as well as making that available for recreation, which is really important. It is about investing in those parks, investing in open space preservation, investing in public waterfronts so that people have access. I think we have this past of building on the waterfront, putting polluting things on the waterfront and discharging them into the water. Yeah. And I think now we've done a lot of work as a state and as a country to start reconnecting with the water, because we all know the benefits of that and how enjoyable it is. I know how important the beaches are for Long Island, for the economy, for people's way of life. So making sure that we have those funds to invest in protecting those precious natural spaces is really, really critical. So yes, there's four major buckets, right? So we've talked a lot about water quality. We've talked a bit about making our communities protected from flooding and from storm surge. There's funding for climate mitigation, for making our public buildings more energy efficient, and for investing in electric school buses. And then there's also that parks and open space preservation money that you've mentioned. So those are the sort of the four main buckets of funding that the Bond Act will pose. And most of that money will flow through local governments. So it'll be local projects that get done. And I know that some of the town supervisors we've been talking to, including we did a show recently with Brookhaven Supervisor Ed Romaine and with Babylon Supervisor Richie Schaefer, and we're working on something with East Hampton Supervisor Peter Van Skyke. So we know how important it is for the communities to get more grant funding to help make our communities better and protect the environment and improve public health. And to your point earlier, to put people to work. So this is really a win-win-win.
It sure is.
Vote yes on November 8th for Proposition 1, the Environmental Bond Act.
Indeed. And the act will also advance environmental justice. And we've discussed the central importance of environmental justice on this show many times. But Julie, I'm going to ask you to explain why having this as part of the act and of all environmental action is critically important.
Sure. So the law as proposed requires that at least 35% of the funds be invested in disadvantaged communities, or those communities that have been overburdened by pollution historically. Now, there's been a lot of environmental racism in how policymaking has resulted in projects, that pollute, in particular air pollution, are very close to people who are of color or low-income neighborhoods. It really has put them at a higher risk of public health. There's higher rates of asthma. There's heart disease that's higher rates. There's a lot of other, there's potentially cancer risks that are higher from being exposed to certain kinds of pollution. And so it's really created health disparities for folks in those communities. And this is making sure that we're trying to help remedy and curtail the pollution that's impacted those communities in the first instance. And so making sure that there's specific targeted funding to help address those communities, I think, is really critical. We've been supportive at the federal level of something called the Justice 40 Principles, which is trying to make sure that 40% of funds in this area are directed towards disadvantaged communities to help redress these past wrongs done to, in particular, communities representing people of color.
Great. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. We're talking to the New York League of Conservation Voters President, Julie Tai. You can find out more about Julie Tai and the work of the New York League at www.nylcv.org. That's nylcv.org. Let's go back, Julie, to the environmental scorecard that the New York League of Conservation Voters puts out. And this is, for me, it's a really exciting tool because when I'm ready to vote, I'm hungry for resources that are going to inform me about the environmental record of the people that I can potentially vote for. And so one thing I always do without fail is to check the state environmental scorecard. And it doesn't tell me about the promises of candidates. It tells me about the track record, about what they voted for in the past. So I could look at both the past and the recent voting records of candidates on environmental issues. So this is a very valuable resource. So explain, Julie, how people would take advantage of this resource and make use of it in the coming election or any election for that matter.
Sure. So I mentioned earlier, every year we develop a policy agenda that lays out what are we looking for, right? And they're always looking at, you know, what can we do to improve clean energy, clean transportation, open space, natural resource protection, clean water and public health, and zero waste. And we look at the bills that are happening in the legislative session. We focus primarily on bills that are moving, are passing, are becoming law. We don't want to just look at things that are sort of a fantasy or long off and aren't yet ready. And then we usually try to pull along bills that are making progress and should be ready in the next year or two so that we can make sure that we keep pressing the legislature, that they don't get to just stop and be done, right? We're not coming to a conclusion. We're a far way from, you know, getting to a zero emission economy, from getting to zero waste, from getting to, you know, everybody having appropriate access to parks and open space. So we go through and we identify with many of our partners what our key bills are for the year. And again, we try to cover all those areas to get a whole look. So it's not every bill that we look at in a given year, but it is sort of the key ones that we think are important moving forward. And we rank them, and we rank them in a very way that's non-discretionary, right? We either you voted for it, yes or no, if the bill came for a vote, or if the bill doesn't come for a vote on the floor of the legislature, like in the Senate and the Assembly, then we base it on whether or not you're co-sponsoring a bill, because that's one way you indicate your support for legislation is by co-sponsoring it. So we do that. And at the end of the year, we score the entire state legislature. We don't do leadership because they often, they said that they dictate sort of what comes to the floor, and we base their scores on what's happened for their entire conference. So on Long Island, you know, the Senate has done quite well. They have an 80% overall ranking amongst all the nine members. But of those, we have five senators who are, would say, have A ratings. You know, they're, you know, between 88 and 94. I think that's A-ish. And then on the Assembly side, it's a bit lower. It's a 69%. So I think that's a little disappointing. You'd think on Long Island, there's a lot of people who care very much about the environment. But we have a lot of members who do quite well. So some of the highest scoring people for this year from Long Island include Fred Thiel and Steve Englebright, who's, of course, the chair of the Environment Committee, Phil Ramos, Steve Stern, Kimberly Jean-Pierre, Michaela Solage, Senator Kaminsky, Anna Kaplan, John Brooks. We have, you know, a bunch of members who really have prioritized. We actually highlighted Anna Kaplan this year as one of our rising stars, because even though she's been in office for a few years, she really has consistently done very well on our scorecard. And, you know, we, you know, recognize that this has been, you know, her average score is 97%, which is really quite phenomenal to make sure that the environment is something that she is supportive of, that she's advocating for. She knows that, you know, working to reduce transportation emissions, for example, in her district is something that's quite important. And so we're really pleased to highlight her this year in our scorecard, as well as Senator Kaminsky, who was, of course, the chair, who has since retired from the state Senate to move back into private practice. Certainly, he and Steve Englebright worked very well together, and we'll see who the new environmental chair will be. But we use this scorecard. We put it out last week to inform everyone of what the scores were of their specific legislators. We emailed all of our members and encouraged them to let their legislators know that they're aware of what their score was, and to thank them for if they had a good score, and to sort of chastise them a little bit if they didn't have a good score. But we want people to use this when they're thinking about who to vote for, in addition to our endorsements, when they go to the voting booth, starting early on October 29th, but certainly when they get to Election Day on November 8th. Yeah, we think this is really important, right? People need to be held accountable to not just, as you said, the promises they make when they're running for office, because it's very easy to talk about doing something, but what they actually do, as your point, their track record, when they're given the option, when it's presented to them to take a vote, what are they doing? How are they voting? And so that is something that we think is really important. We've done it for a few years at the state legislature. We've done it for quite a many years in New York City. And National does it for Congress as well.
In terms of using this voting tool, they go online to
www.nylcv.org/scorecard.
Perfect. We have a couple of other things. First of all, are there any other races on Long Island that you'd like to highlight in terms of them being important? And also say a word about the governor's race.
Sure. So I'm going to start with that, actually. So the League has endorsed Kathy Hochul for governor. We think that she has been proven that she doesn't just talk about climate, she's actually acting on climate, right? Since she took over a little over a year ago, she's really been making the right investments and putting her money where her mouth is. As you noted, she's actually someone who revisited the Bond Act and strengthened it and improved it, which we're really excited about. It's one of the reasons why we endorsed her. We know that she's she's put out another solicitation for more offshore wind, and she really invested with $500 million in her budget for offshore wind opportunities for developing the supply chain and supporting that. So we're creating jobs, not with just the construction, but also with all the parts that go into that and trying to get more manufacturing. She has been very supportive of moving us to electric cars and trucks with, again, those regulations we mentioned earlier this year. And, you know, I think she knows that fracking is a policy of the past, and really we need to move to a clean energy economy, and is also committing to state leadership with getting state operations to be more sustainable with a recently announced executive order, which is one of the reasons why we endorsed her. So certainly she's got a strong record. She comes from an area where she said she didn't know the sky was blue because she was surrounded by the smokestacks of the Bethlehem Steel plant in Buffalo. And so she knows firsthand sort of how important it is to take action to protect communities who are impacted by pollution. So we were very delighted to endorse Governor Hochul on that front.
And it's worth noting that her opponent, Lee Zeldin, has a lifetime environmental voting score of 14%.
And we don't do those scores. National LCV does those scores. But yes, it's unfortunate that he's not taken better actions in Congress on some of those bills that are scored upon there. Besides some of the incumbents that we mentioned, like John Brooks and Anna Kaplan, we've endorsed Monica Martinez to represent St. Senate District 4. She certainly was a good member of the Senate the last time she was in office, including supporting the Child Safe Products Act and the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. We're excited to see not just Democrats, but we're also supported Keith Brown and Michael Durso, who are Republicans running in New York's Assembly District 12 and Assembly District 9. You know, it's great to see it's not just Democrats who are supporting the environment, but also Republicans. And we know that that's important on Long Island. Of course, we've endorsed Bridget Fleming for Congressional District 1 in the eastern end of Suffolk County. So we're really excited for her. She's been a huge champion in her entire history in the Suffolk County Legislature, championing legislation to remove toxic substances from construction sites and investing in water quality and sustainable infrastructure. Those are just a few of the races that we've endorsed in out in Suffolk County. I would encourage people to take a look at nylcv.org/endorsements. We have already made endorsements in 125 races across the state this year. Obviously, we're strong supporters of Comptroller Tom DiNapoli and the Attorney General Tish James. I would be remiss to not mention them and Senator Schumer, of course. But we're expecting to make a few more endorsements in the coming days. So stay tuned.
Great. That's the New York League of Conservation Voters. Just check their website. You have a cocktail party happening on Long Island on October 18th. Would you like to say anything about that?
We do. We have our annual cocktail party at Lessings at Bethpage. We're excited to be honoring the Winter Brothers this year for their work on, you know, on moving us towards zero waste and addressing food waste and other recycling issues. We would encourage people to come. We have information about that on our website. It is a fundraiser, to be very upfront about it, trying to help support our operations and trying to connect with the Long Island community more. So certainly we're excited about that coming up. You know, we always have a great turnout from constituents on Long Island, as well as our local and state elected officials. So we hope that you'll be able to join us. And I would be remiss if I didn't close by reminding folks that early voting starts on October 29th and runs through November 6th. And Election Day is on November 8th. And not just to vote for governor and comptroller and Senate and Assembly, but flip that ballot over and vote yes for Proposition 1, the Environmental Bond Act.
Thank you, Julie Tai, the president of the New York League of Conservation Voters. Find out more about Julie and the Conservation Voters at www.nylcv.org. That's nylcv.org. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Such a pleasure.
And that was my interview with Julie Tai, the president of the New York League of Conservation Voters. I hope that the point that we stressed several times got through to you, and that is that voting for the environment is not a partisan vote. You could be from any party and still care about the water that you drink, the air that you breathe, the food that you eat. And a story came out just today about some new research. I'd like to read to you some snippets from that story. It was about toxic air pollution particles having been found in the lungs, livers, and brains of unborn babies long before they took their first breath. Researchers said their groundbreaking discovery was very worrying, as the gestation period of fetuses is the most vulnerable stage of human development. Thousands of black carbon particles were found in each cubic millimeter of tissue, which were breathed in by the mother during pregnancy and then passed through the bloodstream and placenta to the fetus. Dirty air was already known to strongly correlate with increased miscarriages, premature births, low birth weights, and disturbed brain development. But the new study provides direct evidence of how that harm may be caused. The scientists said the pollution could cause lifelong health effects. The particles are made of soot from the burning of fossil fuels in vehicles, homes, and factories, and cause inflammation in the body, as well as carrying toxic chemicals. We're all voting in the same election, and most of us prioritize our health and the health of our friends and family. Period. So if the candidates we otherwise like are not concerned with life that's being unnecessarily killed by dated technologies only in the interest of keeping special interests afloat in great profits, you need to speak to your elected officials. So let's all come together. Go to the New York League of Conservation Voters, nylcv.org, and look for their 2022 environmental scorecard. You can look up the representatives, you can look up your own district, and it'll tell you who's running in your race that supports a clean, healthy environment. And of course, remember to flip your ballot and vote on Proposition 1. And on that note, we'll end the show. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSP 90.1 FM Stony Brook. I'll be with you again the same time next Friday, October 14th at 6 p.m. and every month thereafter at 6 p.m. on the first two Fridays of the month. For more information on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org. And if you check this archive from that page, you'll find all the links you need for the New York League of Conservation Voters. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by voting on November 8th or voting early. And finally, remember to enjoy each moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we share. Good night.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.